This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, and welcome to the webinar for the ENERGY STAR Luminaire's version 2.0 final specification. We will begin the presentation in just a few minutes. Thank you. Welcome to the Luminaires version 2.0 Final Energy Star Specification. We will begin the webinar shortly. Hello, and welcome to the Energy Star Luminaires version 2.0 Final Specification webinar. We're going to get started here in just a few minutes. It's just now 2 o'clock. We'll give a few minutes for a few other people to come in, and then we're going to get started. Okay, so while we're waiting the few minutes just to give people time to get on and account for different clocks, we'll go through a couple of today's discussion notes. As you've probably heard, today's discussion is going to be recorded, and depending on how the recording turns out, it may be available in the future. We do have a request, however, that you do not place the meeting on hold, because then we occasionally get to hear you hold music, and nobody enjoys that. Because we're going through, and this is a final specification, we're trying to cover all of the changes. There's a lot of material on here, so we're going to ask that you hold your questions till the end of the presentation. We have allotted some time to answer those questions. There are a couple of ways you can ask a question. You can either unmute your lines when we get to that point, which would be star six, or if you would rather not ask the question verbally, you can absolutely submit a question through the question and answer section in your webinar. So we do have a request, though, that if you're going to ask a question verbally, please state your name and organization. It simply gives us a little bit of a reference point as to who's asking the question. All right. All right. That's been about 3 minutes. That should have given people plenty of time to get on. So I'm going to repeat myself once more. Welcome to the Energy Star Luminaires version 2.0 final specification webinar. We're going to be going through the changes, the major changes from Luminaires 1.1, 1.2, through the to Luminaires 2.0. We're going to be touching on the high-level points of it. Obviously, we'd suggest that you follow along and read the specification for yourself, which is on the Energy Star Luminaires page, www.energystar.gov/luminaires. If you're having any trouble getting onto the webinar, we've also posted the slides for this presentation up on the Luminaires page in case you want to follow along at home if you're having technical difficulties. And again, we've got some helpful discussion notes. Just went over those. Plenty of time for questions at the end, but we're going to try and hold questions until the end just to make sure we get through all of this material for everyone. So on that note, we are at 4 minutes past the hour. Let's move on to our first slide. All right, so today's agenda, it's going to be introductions, which will include myself. We'll have the specification rollout timeline, which involves what's next in the specification rollout. It's the final spec. What are the next pieces of it? We're going to run through the Luminaire specification. We're going to talk about where the changes are. We've also got a document posted on the Energy Star Luminaire site, which is considerations for recertification. Many of you out there who are Luminaire's manufacturers are probably wondering, well, if I've already got Luminaire certified, what do I need to do to make sure they stay certified? There's a document for that. And at the end, we've got plenty of time for some questions and answers because we figure there's probably going to be some. Okay, so we'll move on to introductions. If you've listened to Energy Star Lighting webinars before, you've probably heard me. I'm Austin Gelder. I'm a senior associate at ICF International. And actually, this is going to be my last webinar. I'm going to be passing on the torch for helping out the Energy Star program on the ICF side to Dan Rogers, who I'm going to let introduce himself.
I appreciate that, Austin. Thanks a lot. As Austin said, my name is Dan Rogers. I've been with ICF International for a little over 8 years now, primarily working on efficiency programs at the state and utility level. I've been in the architectural lighting industry for 20 years. Hard to believe, but that's true. I am very involved with the IES, and in the past I worked for a New York City area manufacturer as well. So I am looking forward to working with all of you and answering questions and supporting you with whatever you need. And now, Austin, I think you were going to introduce Sam?
Absolutely. Sam Levinson is the next person who's going to be contributing to this webinar. He's been helping out with the Energy Star program for lighting behind the scenes, doing some of the research and legwork. Sam, I'll let you introduce yourself so you recognize his voice as well.
Hi, I'm Sam Levinson. I've been supporting Energy Star for the past year, mainly on the lighting side, and I've also been supporting the electronics and appliance division as well.
All right. Now, you probably don't see Taylor Jantzel on here because she is currently out. She will be back later this year. All right, so let's continue on with our presentation. Okay, so specification timeline. Hey, the Luminaire specification was released on June 1st. Any Luminaire manual. So, what does that mean? What does that mean for you? It's got a 1 year effective date. So, June 1st, 2016. Any Luminaires manufactured at that point will have to be certified to the Luminaires version 2.0. That means that yes, if you're currently certified and you haven't certified to the new one by June 1st of next year. It's going to expire. The certification will no longer appear. Typically speaking, EPA has provided a frozen list at the end of the specification, but you know it's still not certified after that point. There's no grandfathering. I've had this question many, many times, and it's a very simple answer. If you're not current, if you're not on the current spec, when that spec takes effect, you're not going to show up on the list. So. You can can start really certifying your eligible products to the newest version immediately. After December 1st of this year, so about 6 months from now, you're not going to be able to certify any new products to Luminaires 1.2. You know, some people may have products in testing, so there is some degree of lead time, there is some leeway time for getting those certified, but they will still be removed from the list on June 1st of next year. So let's just keep on rolling. Next slide. All right, so scope. We're going to talk about some changes to the scope. One of the big changes to the scope is we've got a couple of new categories that are included, and that's surface mount solid-state retrofit products. We've heard a lot from stakeholders about how some of these products are they really have some good benefits and are in terms of replacing existing fixtures, particularly when those existing fixtures are highly dependent on decor, and that would be the wall sconce and ceiling mount fixtures. These are both non-directional types. The intent is really to allow some optimized retrofits of some fixtures. It's considered non-directional. Just to be clear, a self-ballasted lamp is not a retrofit. It's a lamp. So that's not in the scope of these surface mount retrofits. One of the other things that's changed, they've expanded the outdoor luminaire category. Just to be clear, it includes options for certification via directional and non-directional luminaires. Each has a little bit of a different requirement. It really depends on if the luminaire is essentially full cutoff or not. We'll go into that a little bit more detail later. And we've also removed a number of light sources. And part of this has to do with another change to the program, which we'll talk about later, is that all fixtures must ship with a light source. So thus linear fluorescent, any type of HID, and then halogen sources have all been removed from the scope of the specification. Particularly since linear fluorescent wouldn't survive shipping, as we've heard from many of the stakeholders. So going into a little bit more detail on why these sources were removed, as I mentioned earlier, you can't really ship a linear fluorescent with a fixture. Well, you can ship it, but it's not successful most of the time. It's a long enough source that it's fairly easy to break in transit. One of the driving factors is linear fluorescents are already heavily regulated by DOE to be extremely efficient. More efficient than the Energy Star specification requires. So the program decided there wasn't necessarily a significant benefit there. For HID, I don't think anybody will be terribly upset at this because there's no currently certified products. The EPA has acknowledged that these are very commercially oriented sources anyways, and they have some problems that they're not necessarily problems, just characteristics that don't lend themselves to residential light or meeting the specification requirements. Energy Star references ANSI documents for chromaticity points, but there's not an ANSI document with chromaticity points for HID lamps that we're aware of. And additionally, HID can't meet the startup or run-up time. So you start factoring all those in, it really didn't make sense to keep that within the specification. Halogen was allowed in the specification, the luminaires 1.0 through 1.2 specifications, in very limited situations. It was for outdoor luminaires only, and it had to have a number of controls on it. Really, the energy savings there was making sure that there were adequate controls. But as technology has advanced, it's less necessary now that we have LEDs that can start instantly and function in a wider range of temperatures. So, okay, I will move on to the next step. speaking of scope, previously the scope had made some distinction in commercial versus residential. The program, while still residentially focused, has opted to remove references to commercial versus residential. There's no difference in the requirements. Again, it remains residentially focused, but in all reality, the sales channel doesn't impact the requirements. Partners are going to design luminaires with the appropriate features for their market. So if they want to do business with commercial luminaires, there are requirements for commercial products that they will have to meet, and it's up to the manufacturer to figure that one out. Okay, so we can move on to the next slide here.
The specification has inserted some formal definitions. We're highlighting the new or revised versions of those definitions on the webinar today. The first two are for color shifting dimming luminaires and color tunable luminaires. And the big distinction there is between luminaires that shift in color over the dimming range versus those luminaires that allow at a specific output tunability of the color of the lights. Those definitions are there for your viewing pleasure. We can go to the next slide, please. And then we talk about specific definitions for connected luminaires and also for enclosed luminaires. Specifically as it relates to those types of products and how the EPA defines those products. Next slide, please.
Okay, so this is where...
Sorry, Austin, go ahead.
No problem. So this is where I pick back up. So in the past, EPA has taken a slightly different approach to the definition of a light engine. And that definition has been pretty strict in terms of what a light engine must contain. One of the changes in the specification, particularly the definition that will have an impact, is that EPA's changed the definition to kind of acknowledge where the market has gone, and that the light engines are not as just the market has decided that the light engines are not as integrated as EPA had originally anticipated, but then a lot has changed in the market since the specification was first written. So along those lines, the definition has been opened up, I would say, made more flexible to allow for light engines that rely on the luminaire for optical control and or thermal management. So if it kind of makes sense where if you have a luminaire where there's going to be a glass diffuser anyways, is it truly necessary to have optical control on the LED's light engine itself? Because then you're just going through additional optical control. Similarly with thermal management, if you're attaching an LED light engine to a fixture that can help dissipate that heat, makes sense to allow that. One of the other changes is that a light engine that utilizes a GU24 base that's not in the scope of the lamp specification, which means it's not an ANSI lamp like an A lamp or a reflector. It's really intended for light engines that they're allowed to use a GU24 base as a method of connection for luminaires. So this is it's a change in a definition, which doesn't sound significant, but it is fairly significant in opening up flexibility for manufacturers to design products. Next slide. Okay, so other definitions that have been included include surface mount retrofit kits. As noted, were included in the scope. The key here is it ties into it must be UL 1598C, which is the safety rating for retrofit kits. They may employ an ANSI base, but just to be clear, it does not include self-ballasted lamps. Again, self-ballasted lamps are the realm of the Energy Star lamp specifications. It doesn't include products that use the existing ballast or transformer, simply because that opens up a lot of compatibility questions as well as energy savings questions. So let's go on to the next slide. Pardon me for a minute. Okay, sorry about that. All right. right. I think we can continue on. So, and for testing color tunable luminaires, because that is something that has really cropped up in the last couple of years. So EPA has provided some guidance in terms of testing these luminaires. How do you test them? So the intent of EPA is that all tests, as well as the evaluations, shall be performed at the least efficient ANSI white light setting that's included in the specification. So if, I'll give an example, if the luminaire can tune from 2700K to 6500K, wherever in that spec, wherever within that black body curve that's in one of the ANSI CCT bins is the least efficient, that's where it's supposed to be tested. Of note is that that is a manufacturer, that the manufacturer has to work with the certification body and laboratory to make sure that can be easily and repeatably achieved. There are two other settings that EPA has interest in. That is the default and the most consumptive settings. So for the default setting, the watts, lumens, chromaticity, and CRI, really all that's going to be reported as applicable, and if it's different from the least efficient white light setting. So if it's the same, then there's no need to retest it multiple times. And as I noted briefly, instructions for getting to the control settings for these modes, that's fairly important for repeatability's sake and to make sure that your luminaire is being tested at the appropriate spot. Okay, I think we will continue on to the next slide. So the next slide, we are going to talk about the Certified Lighting Subcomponent Database. This is not something that's new. It's been around since Luminaires 1.0, but it's kind of existed in the Energy Star website. It's not been clearly integrated into a specification before now, and for clarity's sake and for understanding, the CSBD is integrated into the specification. So the language is not essentially changed, so very little has changed about how you utilize the certification data and how you get products up on the CSD. Some notable changes that we'll need to have that will be happening between 1.0 and 2.0 is that the appropriate categories that are not going to be available will be removed. So it'll be linear fluorescent and the GU24 based integrated lamps. Whereas that was an option, that's kind of getting integrated into another pathway for certification, which we'll talk about fairly shortly. Balancer will be available on that list. Light engines, lamp ballast platforms. So one of the questions that will probably come up is how do you test a light engine that relies on the luminaire for heat sinking, and that will be addressed. So let's go ahead and move on to the next slide, which is also about the Certified Lighting Subcomponent Database. So if you've got a light engine that relies on the luminaire, how on earth do you test it? Well, the basic theory is that in a luminaire, a light engine is going to stabilize at a specific temperature regardless of what kind of heat sink or what the actual heat sink is. So therefore, if the light engine test point is the same, you should be able to translate that data fairly reasonably. So manufacturers and labs should have the LED light engine tested with a heat sink that's generally representative of the situation it's going to be in. Now, this does put a little bit of responsibility on the manufacturer as well as the lab, where if the heat sink you test this light engine with is almost too efficient than the real life situations, the data could be useless because when operated in situ, it could be too hot for any of the data to be used. If you test it with a heat sink that's very conservative, the performance will appear lower than it will be in situ. But really that's where those test points are going to be between the manufacturer of the light engine and laboratory that they're working with. So that's it's a decision that they will have to make, and but those manufacturers should have a good idea of how their products are going to perform in a fixture. So, all righty. specification. This was introduced in the first Luminaire specification, has continued forward largely unchanged. There's a little bit of an additional guidance on what kind of test data is required for each variant. In many cases, it's none. Some cases, it's more limited test data. This is just an example. It's not the entire table. But we'll go to the next slide. So what we will talk about in this slide is an additional variation that has been added for Luminaires 2.0. And the intent of this is to add a little bit more flexibility extended to product wattage. So this would mean in select situations, specifically directional fixtures, you can forego some of the testing or trim down some of the testing that's necessary to get product certified. It's allowed in limited situations, again, where the LED is just not changed. The only difference is a driver. We've heard from many stakeholders that LEDs can handle a wide, there are at least some LED situations that can handle a wider range of currents, and that is typically achieved by either changing out the driver or adjusting the driver to perform a specific current. In that case, the distribution itself is not really going to change. So what the intent of this is to allow those distribution-related items, such as the goniophotometer scan for zonal lumen density, the color angular uniformity, those are the primary tests that would be able to be shared between family members. One would still have to test with LEDs specifically. The highest wattage, highest CRI, and lowest CCT, essentially setting up a worst-case scenario for that test, testing the current. There would still be an integrating sphere scan to verify some of the basic performance figures, such as your lumens, your color temperature, your chromaticity, and your power consumption. It's really the scaling or the family variation is primarily related to luminous intensity scans. So let's move to the next slide. This is allowed for fluorescent too, should any fluorescent be used in a directional luminaire. Again, it's allowed when the lamp type doesn't change. So to be clear, when we're talking lamp type, well, we're talking, it would be okay if you went from one wattage of a triple tube to another wattage of a triple tube, but you wouldn't be able to switch between a double tube and a triple tube because that will change your distribution. And this is a situation where the only difference is lamp. We know that there are many CFL ballasts and it can operate several different wattages of lamp. In which case, again, you're trying to set up a test where you've got, I'd say a worst-case scenario, highest wattage, highest CRI, highest CCT. Again, you're doing a sphere test just to make sure that you have the appropriate performance data for the higher and lower wattage products. Okay, I think we'll move to the next page, where we will talk about some of the test methods and reference documents that have been updated or added to the specification. The first one we're going to talk about is ANSI C78.377, 2011. It's been updated to the most current specification. Yes, we know there was one in development, but this is the most current one that is currently published. This change affects LED chromaticity. It will require reevaluation, but in reality, the differences are very minor, and the only time this is really going to impact products that are currently certified is if they are at the very outer edge of one of the ANSI CCT bins. That's where the primary changes have been made. Updated the test method for proper reference of power factor because 1598C has come out and is available for LED retrofit conversions. That is a safety document that is referenced for that particular type of product. IEC 62301. This is one where for any kind of product that includes an off-state power consumption, this will be a new test. This is going to be a measurement of standby power. This is also the one that's been referenced by the Department of Energy in some of their proposed rulemakings for LED lamps. So we're trying to harmonize there as much as possible. IEEE PAR 1789. To be very clear, this is a reference document. It is not a requirement, merely a reference document to be helpful. LM65 and LM66 both were updated recently, and those updates have been incorporated into the specification, again, anticipating that a retest of fluorescent products is not going to be necessary. LM84 and TM28, the combination, will replace the 6,000-hour test for solid-state lighting luminaires. And NEMA's SSL7A is, again, it's a reference document that's more helpful, not necessarily a requirement. All right, so we'll keep moving just a little bit. We're going to talk about test methods. The other test methods, these are ones that are not included, and we'll have some reasons for these not being included, but we've gotten plenty of questions from stakeholders on these. ISTM 21 Addendum A, it was released within the last year, if I remember correctly. To be clear, no Energy Star specification cites the addendum, and the EPA they're evaluating it. We know that there are some impacts to products that use certain types of LEDs, primarily when it comes to whether or not the testing intervals for those LEDs on the LM80 data has been done at a very, very consistent manner or not. And the intent of EPA was not to is to carefully evaluate that before incorporating that. The next one is LM80, just the LM80 addendum. It's not been referenced because really the changes that were contained in the addendum were pretty consistent with the lumen maintenance guidance that EPA had put out. So there's really no conflicts. There was not much reason to it. It is anticipated in 2015 at some point, ANSI is going to put out a standard or test method for LED drivers. It's something that EPA will consider in the future, but as it's not yet published, it's not yet referenced. So, let's see here. Okay, so before we get into this next section, we still have a lot of material to cover, but I think we're moving through at a pretty good pace. So I think it's before we get into the luminaires that ship with lamps, let's go back one slide. Are there any questions? I'll pause and we'll open up to see if there are any questions on the phone or online. I haven't seen any questions come in online. Remember, *6 is to unmute your phones.
Austin, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who's on the line?
This is Howard Wolfman, LumaSpec Consulting.
Hello, Howard.
Just a piece of information.
Yes, sir.
Today, IEEE published 1789 for Flickr.
So it's okay.
It's available.
That's a great piece of information now.
It's available from TechStreet on the download.
Great. No, thank you for that, Howard. I greatly appreciate that. Again, it's a document that EPA considers to be a very helpful reference if you're a manufacturer and you're trying to make sure that you have a fairly low risk of flicker causing problems in your products. Do we have any other questions, or do we want to continue going? Okay, I'm going to go with no other questions, and let's see here. Oh, I think we see one coming online. We did have a question about the clarity of using the same LED. I believe that's referring to the product families. So when we are referring to an allowable variation with the same LED, we're talking about the same LED type in general. It would be the same wattage, the same number of chips, same forward voltage current. Current would be the only variation in that LED. So hopefully that answered the question that came in. But it doesn't sound like we have a whole lot of questions online, so I think we will just continue moving forward. And if that
we
didn't
had another
answer the question
online.
Yes.
Could ballast-compatible T8 LED lamps plus ballast be considered SSL retrofit kits? Could integral drivers
nope.
T8 lamps be considered SSL retrofit kits as well?
No. Lamps are not retrofit kits. EPA has tried to make that very clear. Thank you. And the same goes for solid-state replacements for CFL lamps. Thank you. Good question. All right, so we'll just continue going on then, unless we have any other questions there. Okay, so let's move on. So this is probably one of the bigger pieces of news, is certifying luminaires to ship with ENERGY STAR lamps. This was introduced, I believe it was in the first draft, where the intent is to allow a little bit more flexibility for the non-directional type luminaires. Essentially, if you're taking a fixture with an ANSI base, you can put an ENERGY STAR lamp that's rated for that type of fixture, and that's where the definition of enclosed comes in. Have a little bit of a thermal test if it is an enclosed fixture, simply to make sure that that ENERGY STAR lamp is operating in an environment at which it was tested, within that environment, but a package review, and then you save energy and save money. So it's really a simplified thing. We'll kind of move on to the next slide in this discussion. So we do have a table. The table is in the specification. So for the performance requirements, as many of you may or hopefully most of you know, there is a LAMPS 2.0 specification in revision, and you know, the simultaneous revision has been helpful because harmonization between the specifications is a good thing. You'll notice that the 65 lumen per watt requirement for luminaires is in play, and that's pretty consistent with the current draft of LAMPS. So if a lamp meets the minimum lumen output requirement for the fixture and has the 65 lumens per watt, now we really start talking about making this fixture happen. So 65 lumens per watt, all the lamp permutations, if they're going to be used, have to meet it. So if you have a primary lamp and maybe a secondary lamp supplier, yes, they all have to meet it. If you have different CCTs, yes, all of them have to meet the 65 lumens per watt. Just trying to head off questions there in the future. In terms of source minimum light output, yes, there is a minimum light output requirement of about 800 lumens. There are some exceptions, typically for luminaires that have multiple heads or luminaires that are used in situations where they're more decorative or the light expectation out of that luminaire is lower. As you can see on the slide, the luminaire exceptions to that 800 lumens per source is pretty clear. And all of these methods of measurement are done with the ENERGY STAR lamps. So all of that testing, that's all lamps testing. So we'll move on to the next slide. So there is the lamp-specific testing. That performance testing is done on the lamp. There's still some stuff that needs to be done with the ENERGY STAR certified lamps. With the ENERGY STAR luminaires. So safety rating, obviously, this is specific to the luminaire. It has to be safe and done properly. Labeling and packaging, that's going to be reviewed still because that is a luminaire-specific item. Again, all lamp, if you're doing this option, you have to ship with the lamps. Warranty, toxics, both of those are, the overall luminaire as a whole, including whatever light source is in there. And we'll talk about those specific requirements later on in their own sections. All right, keep moving. Let's see here. Shipping with energy. All right, so, and this is another question. We've gotten this concern from a couple of luminaires manufacturers that they don't always they've done some internal testing and find that not all of the lamps are adequate for use in their fixtures. Well, that's very true, and the specification has some language and has some things in there to try and address that and really prevent that as much as possible. So for an enclosed fixture, we have a definition of enclosed fixture in there. The lamp has to be safety rated for enclosed fixtures. I think that just makes perfect sense. If it says don't use it in an enclosed fixture, you can't use it in an enclosed fixture. I think we'll go with a little common sense there. It has to have been tested for lumen maintenance using the elevated temperature life testing. So that's pretty important for this next part, because just because it's safe in a fixture doesn't necessarily mean it's going to last a long time in a fixture, which is why in the Energy Star lamp specification, there is an elevated temperature life test where it's operated at a higher temperature to kind of reflect what's more realistic situation of when it's going to be installed in a fixture. Because the elevated temperature life test is at 45 plus or minus a few degrees over the life of the lamp, the air temperature in the luminaire around the lamp has to be under 45 degrees C, which kind of makes sense as well. That's the temperature at which it's determined that it will meet the lumen maintenance requirements and lifetime. Therefore, the lamp has to be within those figures. If it's cooler, great. It's probably going to work even better. So and this is measured just via a thermocouple inside the fixture, measuring the air temperature. So that is the attempt to make sure that most luminaire manufacturers will do this anyways. Make sure all luminaire manufacturers will take into consideration how well that lamp will work in their fixture. Okay. So I think we'll move on to the next slide there. Okay. So I did see, and again, I think we're flowing pretty well here. Let's see here. For certifying with a certified lamp, is there a restriction of lamp version? Okay, so that was a good question that we got online, that for certifying, and let's move back just to remind people what section we're on. So if you're using this particular method, at the time of certification of this luminaire, the lamp has to be certified. There you go. So you need to ship with a lamp that's currently certified. And as a luminaire manufacturer, you got to pay attention as to what is going on with that lamp as well, because if it's not certified anymore, you need to make sure to consider that. Let's see here. Another question, can you take a fixture with an E26 base and put a Energy Star lamp in it and call it Energy Star as long as it has the appropriate lumens? Yes, with all of the caveats that we've talked about before, including making sure that lamp is appropriately rated and tested for that fixture, as well as thermal testing as required. And I had one other question, is whether or not the presentation will be available after the webinar. It's actually available right now if you go to Luminaires. So we're just going to keep on moving then. So I think we've handled all of those questions. All right, so efficacy, one of everyone's favorite topics. It's simplified. Everything non-directional, sources, retrofits, 65 lumens per watt. There's no allowances for this. So in the previous specification, if you were using a covered GU24, a dimmable GU24, you could have a lower efficacy. No, everything's 65 lumens per watt if you've got a replaceable source. It's a very limited increase, it's really to account for the fact that there are some shifting needs in the market requirements. There are markets that have within the U.S. that have, say, additional or more stringent color quality requirements, which makes increases in efficacy a little bit more difficult. There's also been a trend towards replaceable light engines, with greatly simplified drivers. That has some advantages to it, including a little bit of reliability. You take some parts out, statistically speaking, but also in terms of making the luminaires more affordable. So that's those all went into considering, you know, whether or not to increase this. So we'll go on to the next slide. So one of the other things that has happened, and this is, again, a result of numerous discussions with stakeholders, is the minimum lumen output is also simplified. 450 lumens is the requirement for the vast majority of luminaires, acknowledging that sometimes you don't necessarily need a 60-watt equivalent in some of these luminaires, which is the 800 lumens. Sometimes you just need a 40. And then sometimes there are products that a 25 is perfectly reasonable. For example, a decorative pendant, a wall sconce, a single head vanity, and wall sconce retrofits. So the intent with this is really to allow more flexibility in design. Please note, it's based on total lumens. So if you wanted to use two dozen small diffuse LED sources in a chandelier, well, then you're not, you would have run into problems because the requirement on the previous specification was a per source requirement. Energy Star looked at this and said, hey, we can just make it a little bit more simpler. If someone wants to get creative with how you get this light output, go ahead. And there you go. So I think we'll move on to the next, we'll move on to the next slide. And now we start talking about the directional efficacies. This, you know, definitely gets a little bit more complicated, but that's because there are more categories involved. But we tried to simplify those as well. So EPA looked at the categories of cove and undercabinet and said these have a lot of similarities to them, and there are even some products that could theoretically be used for either. The efficiency has been increased significantly. But that's because it had a very low efficiency requirement in the previous specification. The simplified to 125 lumens per linear foot, and it no longer requires an asymmetrical distribution. While an asymmetrical distribution is going to be desirable in some situations, it's not necessarily needed for all situations. And that's really something that the manufacturer, the partner, will again have to determine what's appropriate for where they're selling and, you know, what do they want to sell. Downlights, the major change there is the efficiency requirements have been increased from 42 lumens per watt to 55. Downlight retrofits, it's a little higher at 60 lumens per watt. And that reflects that as a whole, downlight retrofits tend to have a higher efficiency or efficacy, apologies for that, than the downlights. And it's simply because of just the nature of the product and how they're sold. But to be clear, there's been some clarification as to how these downlights are going to be tested, and they're tested in a can situation described in the instructions that are required per 1598C. So if it has the option of testing in the smallest can it can fit into is a 4-inch can, well, it's going to be tested in a 4-inch can. Because really, again, you're trying to represent those the real-life thermal situations that this type of fixture is going to be in, because that thermal situation impacts the performance. If the worst-case scenario can meet it, better-case scenarios can probably meet it as well. Okay. Let's see. We'll move on to the next slide here. So, okay, perfect, right in front of me. Accent lights. Accent lights, one of the changes, aside, this is a substantive change, is that it has increased significantly in efficacy, again, reflecting where technology has gone over the years. It's been several years since luminaires 1.0 was developed. There's been some big steps. But it also allows for a little bit of a wider beam. Sometimes these accent lights don't necessarily need as tight of a beam. Sometimes they require wider beams. Outdoor lights. Again, an increase in efficiency. So there's also a couple of changes because outdoor lights previously allowed zero uplight. So there are a couple of paths that can that a luminaire manufacturer of outdoor luminaires can take in order to meet the zonal lumen density or the light distribution requirement. So one of them is still a gonio photometer test at the Energy Star lab or at an Energy Star recognized laboratory, which will allow 0.5% of uplight, and that 0.5% is not to really allow for any design problems. What it is to account for stray light in the measurement of these. So even small reflections in a gonio photometer can add up to a little bit of light over time. So it effectively still is a zero uplight. Or the other option is if the luminaire has been certified to the International Dark Sky Association as being acceptable and having their seal of approval, well, it still has to meet all the other Energy Star specification requirements, but that's another way to meet the directional outdoor light uplight requirements. And then I would say, finally, the portable desk task lights, this has been updated again. Technology moves forward, and let's face it, with LEDs, it's moved forward very quickly and has taken really big steps. So the primary change there has been an increase in the required efficiency. So, all right, so let's move on to the next page. Future efficacy tiers. This has been we've had a lot of questions on this. It was definitely one that elicited a lot of discussion from the stakeholders. And the stakeholders on all sides had some concerns. The general intent in introducing this in previous drafts of the specification was to help keep the specification relevant without the need for recertification. But what EPA heard loud and clear is that there's really too much uncertainty regarding how that improvement is going to happen. The agency doesn't want to be too conservative or too aggressive, and there was a chance where if you set a future efficacy at a specific level, you're not going to hit right on the money. You're either going to be too conservative and the fixture market has outpaced that anticipated tier, or you're going to be too aggressive and that's going to be very problematic because luminaires haven't gotten up to that level. So what the agency has done is removed it from the final draft of the specification. But simply notes that increases in efficacy, significant increases in efficacy, are anticipated in the next specification version when that starts out. Okay, and with that, I am going to pass it along. I know there are still a few questions, but we'll have plenty of time at the end of this to make sure we get those questions online answered. But I'm going to pass it along to Dan to talk a little bit about the color requirements and what's changed and what's new.
Thanks, Austin. Well, as everybody knows, particularly with LEDs, color technology is changing rapidly. For this specification, currently for all luminaires, the 2700K through 5000K ratings are available for all luminaires now, whereas 5,000 Kelvin was previously limited only to commercial, and for this specification, the 6,500K range was determined to be primarily for the CNI products, and so it was not included, it was not carried through this version of the specification. I know we're all anticipating anxiously the update, ANSI's update to C78-377. At that point, EPA will consider a point revision in the future once that's published.
Hey, Dan?
Yes?
Dan, we're getting a lot of feedback on your line. I'm pretty sure I didn't understand the thing that was said there. That was a little strange. So,
okay, that's sorry okay. about that. I just switched from a speakerphone to a handheld. Is it better now?
Not at all. All right, so I'll kind of take over with this slide, and I'll go kind of slowly, and we'll see if we can figure out what's going on with your phone connection there. So sorry about that. Lovely technical difficulties, but that's okay. We'll kind of keep on going. So okay. Let's see here. Okay, so everybody else was reporting fine. So maybe that was just me. All right. So, Dan, please continue. I apologize for that interruption.
Okay, no worries. Happy to hear that everybody can hear me fine, at least except for Austin. Okay. So, good. Now it sounds good for everybody. All right. So, as I was saying, there was some comments that was received as this spec went through the revision process suggesting that 2200K and 2500K should also be added. So that will be considered once ANSI publishes the updated C78-377. So at that point, I think let's go to the next slide. And so in this spec, we've added a requirement for fluorescent luminaires to report the R9 value from testing, and for solid-state products, including luminaires, retrofit kits, or LED light engines, they now have to exceed the CRI greater than or equal to 80 and have an R9 value greater than 0, a positive R9. Just a reminder for everyone that that wants it to be helpful, obviously R9 is that the value for the deep red, as I've indicated on here, which helps with skin tones and wood tones and a lot of those natural tones to have content in the red. So we can go to the next slide. So color angular uniformity. This is for directional SSL luminaires only. Really, in order to minimize concerns over the uncertainty that happens at the edges and beyond the edge of the beam angle, towards the field angle, the area of interest for Energy Star has now been limited only to the beam angle. And that's really to focus on where the majority of the light in the beam is concentrated. And the specification also clarifies how the 0.006 deviation on the chromaticity is now clarified to the total linear distance from the weighted average initial point. And so that just clarifies the method and how you establish what that variation should be. So at this point, I guess we can go to the next slide. So for lumen maintenance, this specification adds a link to the TM21 calculator. That link should also be active in the slides that when you pull them off of the luminaires website. For inseparable luminaires, the specification adds a requirement that the L70 should be greater than or equal to 50,000 hours. It includes a second option for all products other than LED packages, modules, and arrays, and it allows a qualification pass through LM84 2014 and TM28 2014. The sample size for that test is. And Austin, I'm blanking on this, so if you're calling in again, you could jump on. That'd be great.
Yes, I have. Sorry about that. So the sample size for this is actually based on TM28. If you look in the TM28 document, there are actually different options for sample size depending on how long or what kind of lifetime requirement you want to claim versus how many test samples you want to actually test. So that's actually in the TM28 document, and Energy Star references that.
Thanks, Austin. We can go to the next slide. So now with this specification, as Austin started to talk about the version 2.0 spec, switches from lifetimes dependent on the source to lifetimes dependent on the type of luminaire. So now for luminaires shipping with fluorescent lamps, the lifetime has to be greater than or equal to 10,000 hours. For all SSL indoor luminaires, greater than 25,000 hours. For SSL outdoor luminaires, greater than 35,000 hours. And just to reiterate what I said a slide or two ago, for inseparable SSL luminaires, the lifetime requirement is greater than 50,000 hours. So I believe that answers one of the recent questions that popped up on the webinar. So if not, if you have other questions, please type those in, and we should have plenty of time to get to those at the end. And that the lifetimes are then tied to the lumen maintenance section of the spec. So we can go to the next slide, which is color maintenance for solid-state indoor luminaires only. So now the chromaticity change, again, is now has to be less than or equal to the total linear distance from the initial zero-hour coordinates on the CIE 1976 diagram. Also, there are a switch or a change to the specification that the color maintenance information has to be provided for all LM80 samples and at any and all measurement points. And that is also the case if you are pursuing the LM84 path to qualification. On the next slide, source start time.
And with source start time, I'll pick back up, Dan. Okay, so for start time, we've got, it is a requirement. It has been a requirement, but one of the problems with the requirement previously is that there's really been no specific test method. So in this specification, we're referencing the test method was utilized by Energy Star lamps. So there is a consistent test method to be done. It will require retesting, though, because it is a new test method. Additionally, for the requirement itself, the light source start time, it's gone from 1 second down to 750 milliseconds, which is about 3/4 of a second. The majority of luminaires can handle this majority of certified luminaires can handle this without a problem. For connected luminaires, however, this is a little bit of a problem because there's some communication time of that the connector, the smart driver, or ballast. So that start time remains unchanged at 1 second. And we'll move down to the next. There you go. All right, run up time. So similar to start time, they have a little typo there. It does not use the start time test method for lamps. It uses the run-up time test method for lamps. Again, this is trying to make sure that everyone's products is treated fairly and the same across laboratories, because if they're all using a different test method, it's not necessarily equivalent. Again, it will require retesting, but not a significant amount of retesting. So for run-up time, the requirement has changed very significantly. The time to 80% of stabilized lumen output needs to be less than or equal to 45 seconds. In the previous specification, that was 60 seconds for non-amalgam lamps and 180 seconds for amalgam lamps. These measurements are taken at the end of 100 hours of seasoning, but there is no distinction between amalgam and non-amalgam in the Luminaires 2.0 specification for run-up time. Okay, and we will go ahead and move to the next slide. We'll talk about power factor. Because we've eliminated the distinction for commercial, it's greatly simplified power factor, and it really just has to do with watts fluorescent. It's just over 0.5. With solid state, there's always been the requirement of greater than 5 watts. It has to be over 0.7 power factor. With transient as well, it's a very limited change. The requirement itself hasn't changed. All samples still have to pass. That's not a change. But the sample size itself has been reduced to 1 luminaire from 3. you doing less of that testing? All right, and if we move on to the next slide, I believe we're getting into standby power. And for standby power, I'm going to let Sam Levinson take over.
Thank you, Austin. All right, so for standby power requirements, standard luminaires shall not draw power in standby mode. Standard luminaires should not have a standby mode. For luminaires with integral motion sensors, occupancy sensors, photosensors, or connected functionality, the luminaire may draw up to 0.5 watts in their standby mode. If the luminaire has an energy saving feature that I just mentioned, the integral motion sensor, occupancy sensor, or photosensor, and a connected functionality, it may draw up to 1 watt in the standby mode. So, for example, a connected downlight could draw up half a watt, and a downlight with an integrated motion sensor could draw half a watt. And if that same downlight had connected functionality and the motion sensor, could draw 1 watt. A downlight that contains both a motion sensor and a photosensor could still only draw a half a watt. And additionally, we have allowance for power supplies connected to multiple luminaires may draw up to 1.5 watts in a standby mode. Another update to the standby power requirements, we've updated the external power supply performance requirements to allow for the new Level 6 International Efficiency Marking Protocol. So now the power supply has to meet Level 5 or it can meet Level 6. And for the standby power consumption test method, we're now referencing IEC 62301 for household electrical appliances measuring the standby power. This is the same test method that is referenced by the DOE. The data is collected over time, intervals of 1 second or less, and accounts for cyclic and non-cyclic power. And it generates the average reading mode available for non-cyclic modes. This is going to be a required test for laboratories. For operating frequency of luminaires, there's been no real change to the requirement. We've added more testing guidance for equipment and testing conditions. This will help in the future for evaluations of flicker. And we've included, once again, we've included the 1789 IEEE as a reference document for consideration. This is not a requirement, it is just a reference document. And for thermal performance requirements, I'm going to send it back to Dan to go over these.
Great. Appreciate that, Sam. So for thermal performance requirements, Section 13, in essence, the product should always be tested in the worst-case thermal condition for which it's rated. And so Section 13.1 really speaks to and clarifies how to test SSL retrofit kits, and that refers to ANSI UL 1598C 2014. And Section 13.2 clarifies the requirements for recessed downlights. And it's a clarification that now products that have the IC rating or the ICAT rating or the airtight rating can all pursue qualification and certification. So that was a clarification. There was some feedback that the previous version of the spec, it just clarifies the previous version and really talks about all three of those categories of products. And that those requirements are also included, and there's an additional marketing guidance in the packaging requirements that we'll talk about later in this presentation. So on the next slide, in terms of safety requirements, for indoor luminaire safety, we've really, the specification condenses those requirements into one table for ease of reference, and rather than being source specific, it's now luminaire specific, and it refers to 1598C 2014 for solid state lighting, hardwired luminaires, and retrofit. And for the next section with dimming, I'm going to turn it back over to Austin.
Great. Thank you, Dan. So for dimming, continuous output is required of continuous dimming is required to 20% or less of the output. If you want to claim dimmable, if you don't go down that far, or don't claim down dimmable. One of the questions we've gotten, a couple of questions that we've gotten from several stakeholders are, for noise, how is it tested? Well, it's tested at the lowest dim state. The requirement is the 24 dBA at 1 meter or less. Just to be clear, though, it's not intended that this needs to be tested in a fully anechoic chamber or anything along those lines. The intent is really to make sure that you don't get an excessively noisy luminaire. So we'll move on to the next slide. I'm going to hand it right back to Sam, who is going to talk a little bit about connected functionality.
Thank you, Austin. So connected functionality is one of the bigger sections that we added in the new luminaire specification. Energy Star has been working on integrating connected functionality across applicable products. So we borrowed a lot of the specification language from other specifications such as pool pumps and room air conditioners, but we simplified it for luminaires because it's a simpler product with not as much standardization so far in the demand response and other connected functionality. So connected functionality is an optional requirement. The only reason if you meet these requirements, you can be listed as Energy Star and listed as a connected luminaire. The product must continue to comply with the applicable product safety standards. So regardless of the connected setting, it can't be set to a range that would be too hot for the safety ratings, for example. And it must comply with the standby power requirements that we mentioned earlier. So, connected product criteria, 15.21. A connected luminaire or retrofit must include the elements, hardware, and software or firmware, or instructions required to enable connected functionality. This means that the product has to be ready to be connected. We clarified through the spec development process that it just could require just the instructions. Say you need to go to the website and download the application, that's fine. Not everything has to be included in the box, but everything needs to be available through instructions. These elements may be resident inside or outside the base of the luminaire. So this allows for external software, like an application, or external hubs that connect to multiple luminaires. All right, 15.2.2 covers open access. So the specification requires an application programming interface, or API, or similar documentation shall be made available to interested parties that enables the connected functionality described in the section. So EPA's intent to this is to allow for interoperability between different luminaire manufacturers and products, and to allow for innovation in features and capabilities. So if it's open, people and other companies can create programs that would control the luminaire. Language referencing the open standards communication have been removed. This, once again, EPA's intent is to remain flexible with the connected requirements. We are trying not to be overly restrictive, as the open standards haven't really been worked out yet. And this is a pretty new product category. Section 15.2.3, energy consumption reporting. The product shall be capable of interconnecting with consumer-authorized entities and communicate data representative of its energy consumption. So we are recommending an interval of 15 minutes for the energy consumption and recommending watt hours as the unit of consumption, but alternate units and intervals are allowed. Operational status reporting. At a minimum, the product shall be capable of providing the on-off status to energy management systems and other consumer-authorized devices, services, or applications. The luminaire needs to communicate if it is on or off. That is the only real requirement. But EPA is encouraging reporting of other data if possible, such as CCT, if the luminaire is tunable, or the percent state of dimming. And section 15.2.5, remote management. The product should be capable of receiving and responding to energy management system or other consumer-authorized remote requests via devices, services, or applications, similar to hardwired consumer-controllable functions. So this just means it has to be controllable remotely, is the point of the connected luminaire. The luminaire may, but is not required to allow demand response or allow third-party access. And 15.2.6, information to consumers. If additional devices, services, and or infrastructure are required to activate the product's connected capabilities, prominent labels or other forms of consumer notification shall be displayed at the point of purchase in the product literature. And EPA's intent is for it to be clear to a consumer what the device is capable of doing out of the box. All right, so that wraps up a connected, and I'll pass it back to Dan to go over labeling and packaging requirements.
Thanks, Sam. So the version 2.0 spec includes optional CCT nomenclature, which is relevant for all sources, 2700 soft white, 3000 warm white, 3500 neutral white, 4000/4100K cool white, 5000K daylight. Those are optional nomenclatures. We received a lot of feedback on that, particularly the 2700 and the 3000 Kelvin soft white and warm white are often used interchangeably. And so these were added or included in the spec this time as optional nomenclature. And to meet the CCT requirement for labeling and packaging, the lighting facts label, as applicable, can be used to meet that color designation requirement. So on the next page, this is hopefully a simplification in for luminaires marketed as dimmable. The packaging now must include a list or a website address at which a list of compatible products and or incompatible products is provided, or a message noting limitations and a website address to find out more specific information. So rather than having to provide an entire list on the packaging, now a QR code or a website address, I believe, can be provided to do that. And as always, when you are referring customers to a website address, partners encouraged to maintain an up-to-date compatibility information at whatever the web address that you provide for that product. And then the next page, it talks about for all directional luminaires, there's now a requirement for demonstrating the light distribution of that luminaire on the cut sheet or the marketing materials or on the packaging. And really, this requirement is extremely flexible, and it's simply seeking for the manufacturer to illustrate however they feel is most useful to communicate how the light is distributed from that product. And on the next page, for light source shipment, since he talked a lot about for sources shipping, I'm going to turn this back over to Austin.
Okay, so thank you very much, Dan. This is something that we're going to be very clear. The light source must be included in the luminaire. There's just too many questions about what happens in the consumer experience if there's not a light source with the luminaire. So that chops into chip. Without a source is gone. Really, it would have boiled down to if a consumer purchases a product that does not ship with a lamp, they could, again, be very easily, they could very easily select the source that does not meet the Energy Star program requirements, that they're not going to be happy with, that won't meet the lifetime, that really it will just, it had the potential to really impact the perception of of quality that, that all of the manufacturers who make Energy Star put into their products. So, as such, EPA had decided in the course of the specification drafts that the light sources had to ship with Luminaire. There wasn't going to be the option to ship without anymore. Okay, so we'll move on to the next slide. So, and it, just as a reminder, light engines are also light sources. They've got to ship with Luminaire, as they are a source. If it's not removable, it's not really a light engine. That's called an inseparable SSL. Luminaire is one thing that an additional, I guess you'd call it packaging, that can be leveraged is a Luminaire can indicate if they are compatible with and certified or use a source that's certified to any of the current Zaga light engine books. To be clear, a light engine that's used in an Energy Star Luminaire does not have to be Zaga, but if it claims Zaga compatibility, the source must be certified by Zaga, but it also has to be tested by an EPA-recognized laboratory because that's the kind of performance data we can accept. So really what this is, it's adding a little bit of flexibility, a little bit of ability to communicate if a product is using a somewhat standardized light engine or not. So that's where this came from. All right, so let's move on to the next slides. All right, so we're just about wrapped up here. So warranty requirements, there's no changes here. These are just kind of reminders of what the warranty requirements are. They're good warranty requirements to have, though, because we open up the different paths and they still apply. Lighting toxics reduction, again, no changes in this. More of a reminder that lamps have to have a very small amount of mercury. It's an EPA's, it's the agency's interest to limit the amount of mercury that comes with any of these lamps to very, very small amounts. So we'll move on to the next slide. So, many of you are going to have questions about how do I recertify? How do I make sure my product stays on the list for those people who are manufacturers or partners on the list? And same with labs or certification bodies saying, well, what should we be looking at in terms of recertification? Well, handy thing is that EPA has put out a document that addresses this and that has some of the considerations that you'll need to take a look at, whether you're recertifying a product on either side of the certification or if you're just interested in what's changed. There's a great guide. It's on the Luminaire's webpage. Again, I'll make the plug that these slides are on the webpage as well. It is the intent as well to take this recording and, pending a good quality recording, actually put this up on the web for future reference. So, we'll move on to the next slide, and we'll talk a little bit about the next steps, and Dan is going to take over, and he'll talk a little bit about the next steps, because he's going to be guiding, he's going to be helping everyone get through these next steps.
Thanks, Austin. Well, as the slide says, we are in the process of updating the Energy Star Laboratory Guide for Lighting, which obviously we need for laboratories to be recognized for Luminaire's version 2.0. We are in the process of updating the start time and the run-up time test methods to refer to units under test, not just lamps. That is, look for those to be out for public comment soon, within the next few weeks. There's not really any substantive changes in those documents, just clarifications in terminology and referencing the most recent versions of the reference documents. There is an updated QPX form. Those are in the CB's hands. The updated QPL and Product Finder will allow visibility of luminaires that are certified to version 2.0 versus those that are certified to version 1.2. And as many of you know, we are in the ongoing revision process. Looking ahead to the next draft, which will be draft 3 of the Energy Star Lamps version 2.0 specification, and look for that to be out in the next draft 3 to be out in the next month or so. And with that, I think it's time to open up for questions. And I have seen quite a few on the webinar, but now before we get to the questions that have been asked online, Austin, if it's okay with you, we'll just allow people to unmute their line if they want to ask a question. As a reminder, star 6 will unmute and then mute your line after you ask your question. And then if you do have other questions, we'll also be taking those through the webinar themselves. And as always, if you have questions or if something comes up to you after the webinar ends, you can always contact us at lighting@energystar.gov. So with that, questions.
Hey, Dan or Austin, this is Carl Bloomfield with Intertech. I have a quick question regarding the 2.0 versus the current 1.2.
Sure.
So you've allowed some new family groupings under the new 2.0, and obviously the labs are not yet accredited to the 2.0, so we can't really certify products to the 2.0 just as yet. But in the interim, can we start to use a new family grouping policy as we certify, or as we currently certify luminaires to the 1.2? Or no, we have to wait until 2.0 is up and running and the labs are issuing certifications to 2.0?
Hi, Carl. Great question. The answer to that is, yeah, you have to wait until the 2.0 labs. Realistically, there's only a small handful of test methods that they have to add to their scope of accreditation. So the hope is that it will not take very long to get those labs up and running.
Hey, Austin, just to confirm, I was only referring to the family grouping requirements, so not so much the
yes.
test methods, but the family groupings part, too.
Yes, the family, well, they're related. So the family okay. grouping requirements are specific to Luminaires 2.0. They can't be transferred backwards, sorry. But that was indicating that, yes, the test methods for 2.0 should also be done quickly, because you had noted that there might be a slight lag time between when laboratories can get accredited and when you can start certifying. Or rather, you can't start certifying until they're accredited. There you go.
Any other questions on the phone before we jump to the webinar?
Okay. Let's answer a couple from the webinars. We got another one actually regarding family grouping, so I think I'm going to go ahead and address that one here. That had a request to better explain the family variations with an LED CCT. So if a manufacturer has a single luminaire with three different LEDs at different CCTs, and by three different LEDs, I'm making the assumption that the statement's talking about the only difference in the LED is the CCT. That you only have to test the lowest CCT of the bunch, and that is a yes, according to how Luminaires 2.0 is set up. Okay, and I will just kind of keep rolling right through these questions in the webinar. And similarly, I think we might have kind of answered this before. I had a question of does a lab need to be re-recognized or re-evaluated from 1.2 to 2.0? And the answer is yes, because you do have additional test methods. Now, two of those test methods, the lab may already be recognized to for lamps. So if a laboratory is already recognized Energy Star lamps 1.0, you've already got Energy Star start and run-up time on your list. So the only thing to really add there would be the off-state or sorry, standby power test method. Let's see. Do we have any other questions on the line before I keep rolling through the ones we've gotten through the webinar? Star 6 to unmute, just as a reminder. Okay, then we'll just kind of keep on going then. Had a question about whether the CV can simply accept the declaration of Rojas, and that is a yes. That is not something that's tested by EPA, but that documentation has to be maintained. It's not something that needs to be evaluated by the CV, only that you have to provide the mercury information should your product contain it. I'm just going to, if you don't mind, I'm just going to answer a few questions. I'll ask if any others have popped up that people want to ask verbally. Let's see here. Okay, so I got another good question is, do we need to connect, do we need to test for connected functionality? This came from a recognized body. And the answer to that is no. There's not really any test for connected luminaires. That can be determined by looking at things such as documentation. So, okay. Are there any, I'll just pause for a minute. Does anybody have a question they want to ask? Don't be afraid. Okay. So we'll continue going through here. Had a great question online about the dimming testing. It was noted that there is a 20% requirement that lamp must dim down to 20% or low, or sorry, not the lamp, sorry, the luminaire must dim down to 20% or less. And the question was, that's by light output and not current, correct? And the answer is correct. That is by light output. Measuring current to determine dimming is not an adequate method of determining whether or not it will meet the dimming requirement. All right. All right. We have wow. We've got a whole bunch of questions online that we're trying to work through here. So we'll just keep going then. How to report the operating frequency when there's no measurable frequency in the light output. Regardless, there is a very well-filtered, well-designed driver will show very little flicker and very little frequency, but there should be some, if you just zoom in essentially on the frequency, there should be some level of repeating frequency. That's something that we can certainly be discussed. Let's see here. I had another question about CCT variations. If a product is in multiple CCTs, do they need to provide all the packaging to the certification body? And then the answer for that is yes. All of the CCT, all of the family variations, you'd have to check out the packaging to make sure the packaging is compliant there. All right, so does anybody, I still see a lot of questions coming in on the webinar, but Star 6 will help unmute the lines.
Hey Austin, this is Jeff Woods. I have a question.
Sure.
Going back to that, the directional luminaires and them having to tell us about the distribution, how the light is distributed, is beam angle sufficient for that, or does it have to be an illustration?
You know, that is a great question. I know the intent of EPA is to provide some sort of visual illustration or visual representation of how the light would be distributed. But that's a question we can certainly work on clarifying.
Okay, because if you put something there like it's very flexible, then they're going to say, well, why can't I just tell you it's a 25 degree beam angle and that should be sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, that's a fair question. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Austin.
Does anybody else have a question they want to ask before I continue digging through the pile of questions through the webinar? Oh, okay. So we have another. sorry about that. So we have another question online. Is this actually related to the transient question? Is transient protection the only test reduced to one sample size? And the answer is no. We did not highlight this throughout the specification, but it, thank you for pointing this out. There have been a number of reductions in sample size throughout the specification that if you go through, you will find that that is something that EPA took a good bit of time trying to evaluate and say, where can sample size be reduced? And that is absolutely something that that has gone through, and there are many that are many areas where sample size has been reduced for testing new fixtures. So, good question. And I apologize, I don't have that list handy. Let's see here. Other questions? Let's see here. I had a question of was the requirement for step dimming? Step dimming is step dimming, but it can't be called dimming in the luminaires 2.0. EPA determined that effectively when a consumer will think about dimming, it's typically the assumption that it's a continuously dimming. So step dimming is not prohibited, but it won't be listed as dimming. So that was a good question. Thank you. Let's see.
Hey, Austin.
Yes.
This is Lynn from Good Earth Lighting. I just have a quick question. I'm seeing under the product labeling and packaging requirement, 2700
yes.
says soft white.
Mm-hmm.
Yet under the lighting facts labeled, 2700 has always been warm white. If we want the consumer to start to understand these better, aren't we sending two different terminologies, messages? I think it should be consistent.
Okay, you know that is something that that's great information. That's something we can consider. To be clear, the when you're talking about the descriptions for the CCTs, those are all optional. It was EPA's attempt to have some sort of consistency in naming. If lighting facts notes that one is warm white, then there's nothing in the specification prohibiting you from using that.
So it's optional. You don't have to use what you've put down here in the requirement.
Correct. It is
okay.
Optional. It's recommended nomenclature, not necessarily required nomenclature.
Okay. I agree. We agree that it should, you know, we should try to be consistent, but we just noticed it's different.
No, thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate
that. Thank
you. Okay. So getting back in here. Section, let's see here. Let's see, I've got a question here on operating frequency. It refers to IEEE 1789. The question is, does 1789 have a test method for operating frequency? I do believe 1789 has some test methods that would be helpful in determining operating frequency if there are multiple frequency components of an output. But again, it's a reference document. The operating frequency requirement is really a simplified version of trying to address concerns over flicker. The 1789 is a document that it is a reference document because it has good information regarding flicker, which is related to which is related to the operating frequency. So that's why it is there as a reference document. And again, it is not a requirement. You don't have to meet the IEEE 1789. It was EPA's intent to make sure that manufacturers were at least aware of it and that were considering the other factors of flicker when they're considering their operating frequency. Okay, let's see here. I had a question, I believe, from a laboratory about what the process of getting re-recognized. Well, that's really up to the process is specific to your accreditation body in terms of getting on your scope of accreditation. But in terms of getting re-recognized, that would be just putting in an updated laboratory application and trying to and adding on the additional LAMPS 2.0 categories. So. All right, so do we have, are there any other questions out there? As I've run through the majority that we've gotten online here. Okay, I have one more. I have another question that came in online. And the question is about why did we change the requirement for insulation contact versus airtight. And the question being, well, isn't insulation contact without airtight not as good? And the answer is it really depends on the situation. Insulation contact without the fixture itself being airtight may not, you know, the airtight nature may not be necessary if it's being installed in a ceiling that is not connected to the outside, essentially, so you don't have to worry about that leakage going all the way and getting the HVAC heating or cooling leaving the building. So there are situations where insulation contact without being airtight isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, obviously, it's better if it's more sealed in terms of making sure that you don't lose heat or cooling, but the intent was to be a little bit more flexible because there are situations where that airtight isn't necessary. All right, so that's one. Let's see here. I had a question about 347 volts. Is that part of the Energy Star Luminaires 2.0 Energy Star Luminaires 2.0 specification? The answer is no. 347 volts is generally a Canadian-specific voltage, but it's also very much a commercial industrial-type voltage. That's higher than you're likely to see in any kind of residential applications. Again, the focus of the program, despite removing the commercial versus residential distinctions within the specification, and note that I think you'll still be able to describe your markets that you sell in. But the specification is still very residentially focused, and 347 is a very high voltage for something, for a specification that is focused on residential applications. Sorry, I'm trying to keep up with all of these questions that we're getting. Okay, so we have a question on what an SSL retrofit is exactly and how it differs from a lamp or an LED light engine. And noted that it is not a lamp, but what is it? So when you're talking about a retrofit kit, it is designed to replace the electrical and optical characteristics of the luminaire. And actually, while we've got this open, I know it's probably a question more people are asking. Sam, could you get us back to that particular definition early in the specification? So we're getting there. We have a lot of slides. Okay, so the definition as it is in the specification, it's intended to replace the light sources in previously installed luminaires, and it's intended to really replace them and not necessarily be reversible. So if you were to install a lamp in that system, it's not really a retrofit. Well, because it's a lamp. You're installing the base and running off of quite often the same power supply. Lamps are covered in the Energy Star lamp specifications. I'm trying to make it clear. Sometimes it's not as clear as it could be. When it comes to the retrofit kits, there are requirements in UL 1598C for the retrofit kits. In other words, in terms of how they're tested, what environments they're suitable for, directions for installations. They can have an ANSI standard base, but this is more typically just the electrical connection. This isn't talking about the actual self-ballasted lamps themselves. Again, if it's a self-ballasted lamp, it's covered under the lamp specification. And there are some self-ballasted lamps and lamp products that would be excluded because they're also excluded under the lamp specification. And the examples of that would be the PL and the fluorescent tube type products. Those are not considered SSL retrofits. Same thing with the bypass. Even if it's a lamp that bypasses the ballast, it's still a lamp, and it's not considered a retrofit kit. So hopefully that answered the question. All right, so I've been talking for a little bit. Are there other questions that we have online or people that are waiting for me to stop talking that would be beneficial to have answered? Let's see. A follow-up question to 347 is, what is the allowable voltage range? That is 120 to 277. I apologize for this not being terribly exciting. I'm going through a long list of questions and making sure that I've answered all of them. So I know it's absolutely riveting for those folks on the phone. Okay, so we have another one for a lab. For dimming electrical and transient, that will only require one sample. Can they follow that from now on? I believe this is a question somewhat similar to what we'd gotten a question from earlier, is that can you apply these sample size and these requirements to luminaires 1.0, or well, in this case 1.2 certifications? And the answer is no, these are all limited to luminaires 2.0 certifications. So similar with the product families, the product family requirements, that specific to luminaires 2.0, luminaires 1.2 still exists as is, and those requirements are laid out in the luminaires 1.2 specification. All right, Sam, I think I've hit all of the questions that we've gotten so far.
Yes, I agree.
You seeing any others?
No, I don't.
Okay. Great. So it seems like we didn't necessarily need the full amount of time for the webinar. We'll open it up. Again, *6 to unmute. If there are any other questions as to how what changes happened in the specification, how it's going to work, anything else along those lines, we're going to leave the line open for a couple of minutes for any kind of further discussion, or feel free to send more questions into the webinar, although that's not nearly as exciting to listen to. I got 3:40 in on my clock. I'll give it till about 3:50. And if nobody asks any questions, I think we'll wrap this up, and you can have some of your afternoon back. Just making sure that we haven't got any more popped up. It's really not looking like it. So I'm going to leave it open for one more minute. Anybody? Once, going twice. All right, I think, let's see here. I think that answers all of the questions that we have in the inbox. I'm not hearing any questions online. Hopefully, everybody online has found this at least to be somewhat helpful in reviewing the specification. This presentation is already up online. Pending good quality audio, we will also try and post up the audio as well. That might take just a little bit longer because that's a big file. I guess in that regard, I'd like to thank everybody for their time and coming and listening to us talk about the specification. And then for those of you who I've worked with over the years, thank you all very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Everybody have a fantastic afternoon.